Hi, I'm Lydia Bastianich, and you're listening to Food Fridays on the Leonard Lopate Show.
Put in the headphone. If you're an apple lover like me, this is a particularly exciting time of year when there's an abundance of everything from Ida Reds and Macoons to Romes and all sorts of other heirloom varieties that you may never have even heard of. That's why we have invited Roseanne Gold, the four-time James Beard Award-winning author of 13 cookbooks, including most recently Radically Simple from Rodale, to be on our show, and Elizabeth Ryan, the owner of Breezy Hill Orchard in the Hudson Valley, and they'll be giving us the lowdown on apples and how to make the most of this bountiful season. Welcome to our show.
Hi.
Plus, we also want to hear from you, our listeners, with a question or your favorite apple recipes. Either give us a call at 212-433-9692, or you can write us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or on Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Elizabeth, how is this year shaping up in terms of apple production?
Well, believe it or not, Leonard, it's the biggest crop of my life, and I think that's true without the north through the Northeast. The growers have an abundant, incredible crop.
Well, what makes apples grow? Is it that the rainfall has to be just right?
It's a whole mix of factors. One of the things we're looking for is just the perfect winter, which, of course, we don't get very often. Not too hot, not too cold, the right amount of moisture. It's magical when it happens right, and it's happened right this year. But we've had 2 years of hurricanes and crop losses and crop failure. So it's always feast or famine for us.
Well, a lot of people think of the Northwest these days as the source of apples. How does the New York State and the East Coast rank?
Well, New York State is still number two, I'm happy to say, but there's a very...
Behind what? Washington?
Washington State, but the gap between the billions of bushels of apples that they pick and the millions of bushels we pick is very, very large.
So they really are mass producing.
Well, they have a good climate to produce a certain kind of, they'll hate me for saying this, but a somewhat generic apple.
Golden Delicious and Red Delicious.
Yes, and I think they've morphed out of that, but they're really the people who took hold of Red Delicious and gave us that rather nondescript, generic, possibly mealy. You can tell I don't like them very much.
So you don't grow delicious apples?
I do grow a few. And that's because my orchard, which is a founding farm of Green Market, is really an orchard that was typical of the 20s or 30s. So we had a lot of heirloom varieties, and we also had the original Red Delicious, which doesn't look anything like what you see in the store. It's the Red Delicious of the 1920s and 30s. It's not even red. It's actually a streaky yellow and red. Actually, you know, not too bad of an apple.
How many different varieties of apples do you grow?
Somewhere between 100 and 200, I'm not really sure.
Really? So are you adding new ones all the time?
All the time, whenever we can. And we have a lot of things where maybe we'll plant one or two trees, we'll see how they do. They take 5 to 10 years to come into production, so you have to be very patient in this business.
Well, where do you find new varieties, or are they old varieties that you're rediscovering?
Well, I'm always looking for a good variety. So the heirlooms, and Roseanne and I were having a chance to talk about this earlier. Heirlooms really were prized for their flavor and their keeping qualities. We don't really care that much about keeping qualities. So a lot of these older apples have a very rough skin. They have a very dense texture. They have amazing flavor. And somewhere along the line, as supermarkets came along, we were looking for uniform apples that were really big and really shiny, and flavor somehow didn't really matter that much.
And no bruises.
And no bruises.
And no discoloration.
And I can tell you, as an apple grower, getting an apple off the tree without bruising it is an art.
Roseanne, do you have a favorite kind of apple to cook with?
Well, it's funny. I'd much rather eat a banana or a mango for the most part. So I was really surprised when I looked in my recent book and saw that I was cooking with so many apples. And I'll tell you a little bit about that. But I, in order to get ready for the show today, did a tasting of 11 different apple varieties and actually used some wine tasting techniques. I came up with a little vocabulary, wasn't quite sure what I was looking for. I'd never done that before. And the variation was extraordinary. But I did have one favorite, and I actually think it's one that Elizabeth grows because I found it in the farmer's market. And Elizabeth, tell me about Cameo apples. Are they yours? They're the best.
We grow Cameo. They are fabulous. They are a relatively new apple. And so I think that they're a good example of one of the great newer apples that have just incredible sugar, you know, beautifully balanced. That apple does keep quite well.
What does a new apple mean? It seems to me that apples started as one kind of apple somewhere where in Southern Asia, and then they spread around the world, and suddenly we have so many different varieties that they just naturally mutate?
They do. You really put your finger on it. So the simple answer is that apples are not self-fertile. They must be cross-pollinated. And that means you have to have two varieties. And every single apple seed is genetically unique. They're like humans. Some of the differences are obvious, and some of the differences are very subtle. But every single apple seed has the genetic potential to be a new variety. It's mind-boggling. And so as people traveled all over the world from Kazakhstan down the Silk Route into Europe, across into the United States, apples are actually not indigenous to North America.
We had Johnny Appleseed, didn't we?
We did, and he did a world of good. So when people first came here, only very wealthy people could bring a tree. People brought apple seeds from Europe, and there were thousands and thousands of varieties that originated in the Northeast in the 19th and 18th centuries.
When did the phrase, an apple a day keeps the doctor away, come along?
I don't know, but I'm feeling very healthy after having so many.
But it does suggest that people at least feel that apples have some kind of special nutritional value.
Well, the growers, of course, call it nature's original snack. It did originate in the Garden of Eden, if these old books are to be believed. And it is something that travels well and grows all over the world. It's actually the most widely cultivated fruit in the world. And that's because apples are very, very flexible. And so that's a wonderful thing. And I don't really know an apple a day, but I like that phrase.
Well, Elizabeth just said that apples are flexible. And Roseanne, you discovered, just looking at your cookbook, how often you use apples. Do you just say generically use apples?
Or no,
do you have,
as a matter of fact,
do you name the kind of apple that goes best with each dish?
Yeah, I started to. I think the whole notion of connoisseurship with apples may be a trend that is born right here as we speak about this, because I'm starting to be very specific. I think others that I love this year are Gala, Fuji. The Macoun was fantastic. And again, the variability, words like tough and tender, you don't really think about that to describe apples.
This
but those
tart
were
and
words
sweet
that
as
were
well.
Coming. Right, tart and sweet, you know, fleshy. One actually tasted very much like a pear, which was fantastic. And then one was even a little bit corky. So again, using some of the wine terminology to describe what I was tasting in apples was really, really fun. So there are some things I've been cooking and some wonderful, very quick ideas I can share with you. One is just a simple apple cranberry salsa.
Before you get to that.
Yes, of course.
I just want to remind people that they're listening to my two guests talking about apples, Roseanne Gold, four-time James Beard Award-winning chef and writer. Her latest book, Radically Simple. Elizabeth Ryan is owner of Breezy Hill Orchard and Cider Mill in Hudson Valley, as well as the Stone Ridge Orchard and the Knoll Crest Farm. You're all over the place. I don't know how many acres that is. We have an apple quiz on our show page at WNYC.org. So in case you think you know a lot about apples, you might want to take that test.
I'm not sure I could pass that one. What's on it? What's on the test?
Yeah, you're going to have to look after
okay,
we do the show. Anyway, tell us about you've given us a bunch of recipes.
Yes, yes.
Three recipes, but you're telling me about another recipe.
Well, I'm going to tell you about some really quick, easy things, maybe some new ideas. But this notion of taking apples and raw cranberries and just processing them with a touch of brown sugar, light brown sugar, and a pinch of salt. And you make it a salsa consistency. And the sweetness, the tartness is so fantastic. It ages really well, and it's amazing in a turkey sandwich. So there's an example of a great three-ingredient recipe, but it's so good, and you can really have fun playing with the different varieties of apples.
And that's something we can consider for Thanksgiving.
Definitely, and it ages really well.
When you say it ages well, you can make it today. Well, yes. There aren't too many cranberries on the market right now, but when they come out,
right.
Then you just put them in the refrigerator and let them sit mm-hmm. there?
Even a week would do it, and it's really great. I kind of invented that last year. But another idea is this. I found this in Israel, which I thought was really interesting. Instead of dessert, they serve a combination, kind of a swirl of tahina and date syrup, which is also known as silan or like a date honey. And I have a guest coming for dinner Saturday night, and he never eats dessert. So I'm thinking, what can I serve him when the rest of us eat chocolate cake? So we'll do this little swirl of tahina and the date syrup with a variety of different apple slices, maybe as many as 11, and see what happens when he's experimenting with this. But I think that would be really a lot of fun. Another healthy thing I'm doing, which is very, very healthy, is to use Granny Smith apples or really tart apple instead of croutons. I do a green apple crouton in my eggless Caesar salad, and it is so delicious. And, of course, I'm trying to have my daughter eat a little more healthfully. So just a simple idea like that. I think on the website are other recipes. My favorite soup of the moment is a parsnip apple soup.
And we do have that recipe.
Yes, with bacon candy.
And you don't have to use bacon.
And you don't have to use bacon at all. You can even just put some smoked toasted almonds on top. But again, I'm really getting very excited about all the possibilities. Again, not because it's just a plain old apple anymore.
And we'll come back to some of those recipes after we take some questions from listeners. Let's go to Carol from, Northwest New Jersey? Carol, are you there?
Yes, hi.
Is Northwest New Jersey good apple country?
Yes, we have a lot of orchards up here, and I'm near New York. I'm on the border. Warwick is just over the border.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have a lot of great orchards. I'm always looking for organic or at least integrated pest management. And I was just wondering if your guests could talk about that, like why apples are so high in pesticides.
Are they?
Well, actually, I'm so glad you asked that question. And I have three orchards. My original orchard, Breezy Hill Orchard, has now been 5 years in the NOFA New York Farmers Pledge Program. And we are only using certified organic OCIA certified materials at that farm. So I think you actually picked a good person to ask that question to.
Well, how do you deal with the pests, the
insects?
Well,
first of all, I mean, one of the things I often say to the kids who come to the orchard is a lot of these insects have co-evolved with the fruit. And an apple maggot will only eat, an apple. A codling moth will pretty much only eat an apple. And I kind of do this exercise with the kids, and I say, imagine that you're the mommy apple maggot, and you want a place where your little baby is going to be totally safe and have the most delicious food and be protected until it can grow up and be big and strong and go out in the world. Where would you put your baby? Where would you put your baby? And they all immediately say, in the apple. And it's so true. So we have to really coexist with the whole ecosystem. And insects have a place in it, too. It's a very complex thing. But just to answer your question, a lot of the fruit, and we have some of it in the studio, perhaps they'll have pictures of it. It doesn't look like the supermarket fruit. It's gnarly, and there's insect dings, and they're not so very pretty. And we had Whole Foods at Breezy Hill Orchard looking at this fruit. And they said, we want to buy your whole crop. And I said, I don't think you do because the cosmetics are so different. And they said to me, well, maybe we'll start an ugly apple program. And I said, I love that idea because people do have to think a little differently about what they're looking for. It is challenging, but people grew fruit for millennia without pesticides. And that fruit didn't look like this fruit. It looked different. You know, there was the occasional worm in the apple.
But so I haven't seen a worm in an apple for quite a while.
No, and actually, even in our organic orchard, we're trapping out a lot of these insects. So we have, it seems a little mean to me, but for apple maggot, we have these big red balls that look like apples, and they have the sex attractant on them, and then they're covered with sticky goo. So they're very, very effective at attracting the apple maggots, and they actually think that they're about to, you know, go to some luscious apple. And I'm also certified. You could look at the Red Tomato website. There's a wonderful program called Eco Apple, and it's an eco fair trade program for apple growers in the Northeast that voluntarily vastly reduce their use of pesticides, voluntarily agree not to use a whole bunch of things that are perfectly legal to use, and also agree to a very strict protocol where they only use something with justification that has to be documented and third-party verified.
We have to take a little break, and we will come back with Elizabeth Ryan, owner of a number of apple orchards and also a cider mill. We'll talk a bit about cider in the second part of this segment. And Roseanne Gold, the four-time James Beard Award-winning author of 13 cookbooks. You've got to write a 14th one. Radically Simple has been a great success, but
Time for another,
13
yes.
is also bad luck. We'll talk about some of the recipes that she has come up with that involve apples. But first this. We are back with Roseanne Gold, who has been called the diva of simplicity because she's written any number of 1, 2, 3 cookbooks, cookbooks that have recipes with just 3 ingredients in them, if you don't count water and salt,
I guess, pepper.
And pepper.
That's it.
Elizabeth Ryan, who is the owner of the Breezy Hill Orchard and Cider Mill in Hudson Valley and a number of other orchards. And we are inviting your calls at 212-433-9692. You can write us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Thopate. And I'm going to get to those calls in just a moment. But the two of you during the break started asking each other questions, so I want to let you ask those questions now.
Well, I have to say I'm salivating for that apple cranberry salsa. I mean, I can almost taste it. And Roseanne, I want to thank you for bringing this wine vocabulary into the apple world. Let's really do a whole bunch more of that. And you had such an intriguing thing. And I love also the idea of radically simple meals. That's pretty much what we live on. And you did something that's really unusual for fruit. You put a pinch of salt in that salsa, and I find that really intriguing.
What does the salt do?
Well, it's very interesting because something happened just last night, and this is my question for you, and I'll tell you about the salt in a second. So I took all of these apples. I had pounds, right? I tried 11 different varieties. We had several of each, and I made applesauce. And very often, or all the time, I never add water to my applesauce. And what was really interesting is that it was so thick, and I don't know what happened to all the moisture in the apples. I actually wound up using a little bit of honey. It was still too thick. I kind of started to steam it. It was still too thick. I added a little simple syrup. And then I really had to add quite a bit of water. And I wanted to ask you about that, about the moisture content. There was such a mixed variety. I'm not sure why that was the case, why I needed to add water to make my applesauce the right consistency. But I let my husband taste it, and I said, Michael, taste this. What does it need? I said, I think it needs salt. He goes, it needs salt. So this is to the question about the salsa and even the applesauce. There's no question that salt brings out the sweetness in many dishes, and specifically in baked dishes. But now I'm thinking the cooked fruit root may really need that salt to accentuate and to harmonize and balance the acidic and sweet flavors that are going on, especially when cooked.
I think you used the phrase a pinch of salt. So like so many things, it depends on the taster and getting that just delicate balance of just a little bit. Just a little bit, because I think in the right proportion, it does exactly what you said. And I think that people in other cultures often do this much more than Americans. I have seen people who are Latino and also people who are Asian actually put salt on a slice of a fresh apple. I have seen that happen.
Mm, that's interesting. Apple.
Just a tiny bit. Just a tiny, tiny bit.
Certainly on melon. In the Middle Eastern countries, on watermelon and cantaloupe. Well,
but we are seeing more use of salt, especially sea salt, in desserts.
Leonard,
and also
it's driving
pepper.
Me crazy when they put it in chocolate. It's ruining so many things for me.
Well, I kind of like it.
Too much.
Salt and caramel is a great combination as far as I'm
bad.
Concerned.
And apples.
To answer your question about the applesauce, there's a huge range of apples, thousands of varieties, and when they're picked in the season is also a factor. Apples are going to be picked this year probably until November, and the late apples tend to be drier. They tend to be a little pulpier. This is a gross generalization. The early apples tend to be wetter. And sometimes you do get these older varieties. And I'm guessing that, you had a mix.
Right.
And you had some really, you used the term fleshy before. I actually love that term. That term has been around in relation to apples for a long time.
Huh.
It means succulent and chewy
and not mealy.
And not mealy. So I think, you did the right thing. Those apples just weren't quite juicy enough.
Right. Some came from the supermarket and some came from the farmer's market. But we talked about this cameo that I love so much. But you also have a macoon, which I thought was extraordinary, too. The reason I love them the most is that they tasted the most like apples. And too many of the other varieties are tasting a little like potatoes or have no real qualities at all. They have sweet or tartness, but there's no apple flavor. So bless you for cultivating apples, Elizabeth, that taste like apples.
Well, one of the issues is the varietal selection. Another issue is the season. Another issue is actually that difficult decision of when to pick. And picking things tree ripe, it's a luxury that we have. Huge shout out to Green Market, if I may, for giving me as a farmer and so many farmers the opportunity to let this fruit hang on the tree, pick it, and take it a day later sometimes to the market. And we do that with all kinds of things. And also, the wonderful thing when we got to Green Market, 35 years ago, consumers, all this, quote, non-commercial fruit, russets, I brought a whole bunch of them, fruit that didn't meet the cosmetic standards but was delicious. And even the party line at Cornell was that you couldn't sell this fruit. These old varieties, they didn't look right. They didn't taste right. People wanted a Red Delicious. When I studied fruit growing, that's what I was taught. And when I got to Green Market, I found people didn't give a damn. They wanted something that tasted good, right?
Right.
It had to taste good. And so that became our leading criteria.
And then heirloom becomes one of the favorite words as well. You have to actually find places where the older apple varieties are still being grown and get those seeds?
Well, not seeds. It's cuttings from the trees. And there's a wonderful, crazy group of people, the North American fruit explorers, who go out and forage all over the country looking for old varieties.
My guests are Elizabeth Ryan, owner of the Breezy Hill Orchard and Cider Mill in Hudson Valley, and Roseanne Gold, who's written 13 cookbooks, most recent one, Radically Simple, from Rodale. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. I should mention also that, Elizabeth, you have a cider-making kit, which we'll talk about in a few moments. But we have so many people calling in, and I just wanted to give them a chance to join in the conversation, beginning with Athenis, is it?
Athenis.
Athenis, hi.
Hi. I'd like to share a recipe that I buy Italian tuna and olive oil. Anytime I make tuna fish salad, I add Granny Smith apple cubes in it. Adds an incredible refreshing crunch. and a delicious savoriness to the salad. And I mix it with red onion. I use the olive oil in lieu of mayonnaise. There's no need for the mayonnaise, so it's lower fat. It's very delicious. I add capers, lemon zest, marjoram, flat Italian parsley, red onion, and the green apple. Mix it all in, and it's quite delicious.
This sounds fantastic.
Although it's more than three simple ingredients.
It's okay. I cook with more sometimes.
How quickly can you get here?
Now, apples do go well with a number of different things, with tuna. One of the most common pairings is expressed in a recipe that you supplied for us, Roseanne, pork chops with apples and Madeira Bay butter sauce. Why do pork chops, why are they so often paired with apples?
Well, I actually think that may go way back into culinary history, maybe something to do with the Germans or the Dutch. I think that may be the derivation of that. But that is just, well, I think pork, the idea is that it tends to be a little bit on the salty, savory side, and then apples really balance it with kind of a sweet and tartness. But I really do think it has more to do with certain traditions and certain groups.
Philip from Nyack, hi, you're on the air.
Michael Pollan, in his book *The Omnivore's Dilemma*, makes this rather astonishing claim. He says that the apples that are sold in supermarkets today have approximately a quarter of the nutrients as the apples that were sold decades ago, and it was a stunning, stunning thing to read. And I'm curious if your commentators have anything to say about it.
And, Philip, I want to ask you a question.
Yes.
Have you noticed a difference in taste between the apples that you ate 10 or 15 years ago and the ones you get in the supermarket today?
Well, I'm partnering an organic farmer who just put in an orchard. And so I've been running around tasting apples. And one of the things that happens when you go around orchards tasting apples is you really lose your taste for the apples that you can buy in most supermarkets. Certainly you don't. You stop eating Red Delicious.
Yeah.
And not beating most of the other apples, which I gather have been crossbred to travel well on trucks and look very good. You know, the ones that are growing in Washington State, they all came out of an apple machine, whereas the ones that grew on the East Coast, you know, they tend to be a little irregular. They have hail scars. You know, they're not quite as pretty. And I think that many consumers who buy with their eyes and not with their taste buds, or not with knowledge, you know, they go for these sort of synthetic-looking apples.
So, Elizabeth, do you think that Philip answered his own question?
First of all, bravo for bringing this up. Far be it for me ever to disagree with Michael Pollan, who in my community we consider a god. You know, he's on a pedestal. So if Michael says it, I'm guessing that there's a lot of veracity to that. And to comment on perhaps why that is, I think apple trees, you know, these old varieties were much more nutrient-dense to kind of, you know, put it one way, and the trees were historically very, very large, sometimes 40 or 80 feet tall, and I think a combination of factors. I think that a lot of the commercial industrial apple production trees are pushed very, very hard for uniformity, for productivity. A lot of inputs are pumped in. A lot of water is pumped in. They're grown on really shallow root systems. Those are probably some of the factors. And one other thing that hasn't come up here is that a lot of the heirloom varieties were very, very biennial. That is the natural habit of apple trees, to bear heavily one year and the next year to bear scarcely at all. That is a natural cycle, and that's been bred out for reasons of production.
Now, a listener, Jennifer, wonders why macoons are only available for less than a month each year. So some apples actually only have a short growing span?
Thank you for these great questions. So I was hoping we'd get to talk about Macowans or Macoons.
Yeah.
That's an apple that is it an heirloom? Is it not an heirloom? It was introduced in 1923 by Cornell University, my alma mater.
Now it feels like an heirloom.
It feels like an heirloom.
It's been around for almost 100 years.
Yeah, I would say it's an heirloom. So this is a Macintosh cross with a Jersey Black, an old apple called Jersey Black that seems seems to have completely disappeared. It is, I have to admit, one of my top 10 apples. It has a very, very thin skin. It has an aroma. I brought some of them. It's a magical apple. I used to always say it had a cult following. You're not going to find it hardly anywhere in the country except really the Northeast, and they don't keep well. And no matter what we do, we can put them in cold storage. That apple is going to last. I always say eat them before Halloween. And that's just the deal with McCowan's.
We have very little time, but I wanted to talk about cider. You have actually put together a cider-making kit, and there are different kinds of ciders. There are these light-colored ciders, dark ciders. There's alcoholic ciders and non-alcoholic ciders. Well, first of all, how do you make an alcoholic cider? Is it the sugar in the apple obviously becomes the alcohol?
Well, in the old days when they didn't have refrigeration, it would happen practically the minute you crushed the apple. The juice would come out. If it was warm, there was a natural combination of natural yeast and natural sugar. And it is actually thought, certainly cider and mead are among the oldest beverages on the planet. And so it's very simple to make, but making it in a, you know, there's some craft to it. And so choosing the varieties and maybe choosing the yeast and how long you ferment it and under what conditions and whether you put it in oak and whether you filter it and all those things. There is a great cider revival occurring in the Northeast. I'm proud to be part of it. We make some hard ciders ourselves.
What determines whether it's a lighter color or a darker color?
Well, filtration is certainly one. I'm doing some unfiltered ciders, and also the variety mix has a lot to do with the color. And that same, a lot of this color is coming from the skins. So just as you go into the farmer's market and see Golden Delicious versus some of these dark, I have some old, we call them black wine sap. They're practically black.
You know, I'm using cider now so much in my cooking as a braising liquid. And in fact, one of the recipes for the onion soup is made with apple cider and fresh thyme. And it is fantastic. Instead of using stock or vegetable stock, cider is great.
Now, we've ran out of time, but Roseanne, I did want to ask you about your being the person who saved Gourmet Magazine's library by purchasing it and then donating it to the library at NYU.
Yeah, that was a couple of years ago. I was given the opportunity to do that, and I'm very excited. Every book plate has my mom's name in it. It was done in her memory. And the collection, which I bought, I thought it was 3,500 books, turns out to be more like 6,000 books and documents. So it's available now at Vail's Library. So I was really honored to do that.
And we'll probably, if we go through them, find out that there are all sorts of apple varieties that are no longer with us, like those New Jersey Blacks or whatever they were called. I want that one.
Me too.
Thank you both so much for being on our show. Sorry we couldn't get to more of the calls, but it's been fascinating. We have three of Roseanne's recipes posted on our show page at WNYC.org. One of them is parsnip apple soup with bacon candy. There's also pork chops and apples and Madeira Bay butter sauce and apples to the third power, which is baked apples. And we also have a quiz there that you might want to check out and see how much you know about apples. Thank you both so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.